owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Good afternoon, or whenever you're listening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Over the years, we've shared a lot of very interesting stories on American Warrior Radio. We've even interviewed a dead guy. A sniper's bullet ricocheted into Joshua Mant's leg and severed his femoral artery. He bled out, took his last breath, and died. He was dead for 15 minutes. But thanks to a medical team who wouldn't give up, Josh lived with no brain damage. Miraculous. Now, I don't know if you believe in miracles. I sure do. Today on American Warrior Radio, we're going to be chatting with another fellow I consider a living, breathing, walking miracle. Senior Chief Petty Officer Mike Day served 21 years in the Navy, 20 of those as an elite Navy SEAL. Just over 12 years ago, on April 5th, 2007, at approximately 1:33 a.m., 12 miles north of Fallujah, Day and 21 other members of an assault team approached a single-story building holding members of an Al-Qaeda cell responsible for shooting down several helicopters. It was 1 week before Day was supposed to rotate home. Mike Day was the first man through the door, and the bad guys were waiting. A rifle bullet immediately slammed into his body armor. When the smoke cleared, Mike Day had absorbed 27 bullets and fragments from a grenade blast. He had killed four terrorists and continued his mission, cleared the rest of the building, and then walked himself several hundred yards to the evacuation helicopter. Miraculous. I'm sure this is not the first time he's been called this, and it won't be the last, but allow me some latitude. Chief Day, welcome to American Warrior Radio Miracle, Mike Day.
Well, that one is hard to explain. I don't know if it's a miracle. I might have just got really lucky, but thanks for having me.
Oh, Mike, I tell you what, I've been wanting to have you on the show since I heard your story, and thanks to Robert Bear and the folks at Eagle Rise Speakers Bureau for making this happen. Mike, I want to get into the details of this. I think our listeners absolutely need to hear this, but let's go in the Wayback Machine a little bit here. I heard you describe yourself earlier on in life as the kid that ran with the pack the parents don't want their kids to be associated with. Accurate?
I would say so. I mean, I grew up with a troublesome family. And it got me to the point where I eventually got kicked out of high school, and that's how I found myself in the Navy. You know, I got kicked out of high school. I couldn't go to school in Virginia, D.C. And I wound up finding a place called the Job Corps. It's a government-funded program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to the Job Corps, got my GED. Did a vocational, picked up the carpentry trade, but I was still pretty young. I attempted to start college. The living standards, I just couldn't get through it, and I wound up finding the Navy, via the Marine Corps. I actually tried to join the Marine Corps, and because I had a GED, they wouldn't accept me.
So the Marines didn't want you, so you ended up in the Navy.
And, I love the Marine Corps, but I probably would have only been able to make it for 4 years in the Marine Corps.
Mike, it sounds like from, doing the show prep and reading about you that the Navy actually was the place where you belonged. You were meant to be in the Navy, perhaps.
Well, things tend to work out for me, if I'm patient enough, and I think that I was dropped into what I needed. I look back on it now, and I don't know if I would have been as successful if I didn't, if the SEAL teams didn't find me.
Hmm.
It was quite important that I wind up in the Navy.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just a series of unfortunate events that put me there. Unfortunate events were everything that was supposed to happen.
We can argue that point forever, but I believe that things happen for a reason. And like I said, Mike, I prepped a lot for this show, and it made me smile. I saw an interview or read an article where you said when you're talking about your time in the teams, you said, I can't believe I got paid to do this. I got to jump out of planes and blow stuff up. And what a kick that was.
It's an incredible thing. I mean, it was like a lifetime of, chasing a bucket list. It was everything I needed.
Of what you can share with us, Mike, how many places in the world did that take you?
Well, I did 8 deployments. I got in the Navy in 1989. There wasn't a whole lot going on back then. And I got to the SEAL teams, my first SEAL team in 1990. The Gulf War happened pretty fast, so fast that my particular platoon didn't get to go over to the first Gulf War. But, 8 platoons, I've done multiple peacetime Gulf deployments. Done a UCOM. I've got to see some of Europe. I was in Kosovo for most of that deployment, but I did get to see some other, former Soviet bloc countries, Denmark. That was fun. The farthest south I've been is Panama. Panama was an awesome place. That they've since kicked us out.
Well, yeah, no. There was that whole invasion thing. Hopefully they don't hold that. Mike, let's. What's interesting to me, up until that, until April 5th, 2007, you'd never ever been shot, which is a good thing, right?
Yeah, a lot of people shot at me, but I never got hit. So that's always a good thing when you don't get hit.
We agree. I've been, believe it or not, I've been shot at too. But I'm guessing an angry farmer doesn't quite equate to an angry four Al Qaeda guys. Mike, let's spend some time, if you don't mind, and I get it if you at which point you may or may not feel comfortable talking about this. But walk us through that mission. As I understand it, you were after this cell. They had shot down at least a couple of Marine helicopters. Was it more than that, or what was the tasking there? Is that when your team was sent after these bad guys?
Yeah, it was an Al Qaeda cell. It was what they considered an air cell, so that they were fed the equipment and the intelligence to shoot down helicopters. At the time, I thought it was only 2 helicopters. Push ahead of a handful of years. The squadron that had the helicopter shot down, they actually had 4 helicopters shot down. And they killed everybody on board.
Wow.
As they took down these helicopters. So we initially went after this target. Vehicle-borne, we actually got IED'd on the way in. And a little bit of irony, the guy that eventually got killed on the operation, a Navy SEAL named Clark Schwedler, was in the rear vehicle on the first attempt to go after this target, and it was his vehicle that got IED'd. Almost a foreshadowing, I don't know.
The night of April 5th, that was the second time you were trying to go after this cell, correct?
It actually was a few nights earlier. The actual operation that we're talking about happened the night of April 6th, rolling into the morning of April 7th. And so 3 days prior, we had tried to action this target. We got IED'd, and we weren't able to action the target, and came back and got helicopters for 3 nights later. Heloed in, did a foot patrol into the target. And I eventually wound up being number 1 into that room. The breach team went up. We found out that we couldn't make entrance into the rest of the house from the initial room that we went into. I made entry into a small corridor. Clark came up, and we both stacked on on 2 opposing doors, 2 different walls, and made entrance. And as soon as we made entrance, just 4 dudes opened up on me, around, ripped through the door and hit Clark in the back of the neck.
Okay. Mike, I'm going to ask you to pause there because I want to spend the entire next segment talking about this, if you don't mind. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined live on the telephone by, I'm calling him Miracle Mike Day, Senior Chief Mike Day, Navy SEALs. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Mike Day. Mike is a former Navy SEAL. Amazing, amazing story. I've been calling him Miracle Mike. I think everybody who's met him or heard his story does the same, and you will too. We're just going into, Mike, the point in this mission east of Fallujah where you and Clark had just breached two separate doors. What faced you, and now just I'm trying to, you know, radio, we've got to paint a picture for folks. So you're going in, this is what, about a 12 by 12, 10 by 10 room? It was a pretty small area, right?
It was a small area, nothing in it, but what they're sleeping on, which are like throw rugs, and four guys. Four of them had, between the four of them, they had two AK-47s, and then four and a pistol. Yeah, so that's the room I entered. I mean, this is a small house. Clark entered another room. As we both made entry into both these rooms, that's when they opened up on me, all four of those guys. Clark caught a round in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
He wound up dying on target. Yeah, he bled out. And behind me, the number two guy got hit in the chest. He was an Iraqi scout that we trained. Everybody behind me was Iraqi scouts. And the number two guy got shot in the chest, knocked out of the room. The number three guy got killed in the doorway.
Now, were all these rounds coming from the four men in your target room?
Yeah, they were shooting at me. And and the bullets were just passing through the doorway that I was making entrance into.
Okay.
You could see from the back corner of the room I was in through my door, through the next door, to the back corner of the other room. That's how Clark got hit. And the guy's following me. I mean, that's how we make entry. We don't enter rooms by ourselves. We go in and as two or four-man teams.
Now, the first round that you absorbed, Mike?
I'm going, sir.
Yeah, well, I said the first round that you went ahead was absorbed by your armor, or the first round that hit you was in your chest plate, or
I can't tell you when that happened because I mean this gunfight I'd actually have to break it down between my part of it before and after the grenade blast.
Okay.
Because I was knocked out by a grenade blast. So when I entered the room, they just beat me to the trigger. They opened up on me as soon as I entered the room. I lost my rifle, and as I was falling forward because my legs were just coming out from underneath me, I transitioned to my pistol, and as I was falling, I engaged and killed the guy down the left wall and landed right next to him, and then continued to engage around the rest of the room. And the second guy I engaged had pulled a pin on a grenade, and he was attempting to run out of the room to blow up the guys in the hallway. He had pulled a pin on a grenade, a Russian grenade, and he was trying to go out in the hallway and kill guys in the hallway. And I stopped him. I shot him. He fell to his knees. He blew up, knocked me out. So when I was unconscious, the rest of the team had asked, for status in the rest of the house. I couldn't respond. I was unconscious on the ground. They attempted to make entrance into the room. They couldn't get in there because there were still two guys with AK-47s pretty much just sawing up the door jam. So they figured, well, we're not going to make entry in there. We'll just pull out and we'll use the overhead assets and we'll just blow this place up. So as they were falling back to a safe distance to use overhead assets to take care of the target, I woke up and I wound up reengaging the two guys with AK-47s. They were on the other side of the room, shooting over top of me through a window at the guys that were falling back. One other guy got hit. He's still running around. I won't put his name out, but he got shot in the arm. Eventually wound up riding the medevac back with me. And I reengaged these guys. And this is a pretty surreal event for me. There's been several times where I get into a high stress situation and everything just slows down. You know, look at the movie Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
I lived through that experience and multiple others with I don't know what to say other than an unrealistic timeline. Everything is slowed down to the point where I know exactly everything I need to do. I'm not in a rush to get done what I need to get done. It's just like flat Matrix. It's such a surreal experience that you question yourself, you know, did I actually experience that, or did I make it up? That's how crazy these experiences are. And people that are in shootings, there's literature on this stuff, on how time slows down. I actually also had I don't know if you call it a condition, but it was complete auditory exclusion. I had no recollection of sound when this was going off. Hundreds of rounds were fired in that room. My ears were not damaged. A grenade blew up. My ears were not damaged. Just completely surreal.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe for those of us who've never been in combat, would it maybe an equivalent? You've heard people, certainly I've been in automobile accidents where it seemed like time slowed down is the only way one can describe it. Clearly it didn't. But so, Mike, I guess to me, one of the more amazing, so at this point in time, after you dispatched the second two terrorists, you at that point, you absorbed 27 rounds. And a grenade blast.
Correct. When I woke up, those two guys were shooting over top of me at the guys leaving because I was laying next to the first guy I had killed. And we were both under a window. And that's the window that they were shooting over top, and I engaged them. And I got a couple rounds off, and they started shooting back at me. But I ran a magazine dry. This is inside 10 feet. I run a magazine dry. I do a magazine change. I'm still engaging him, and an AK round hits the foot of this magazine, and it blows the hand grips off the pistol. I cleared the malfunction and then killed those two dudes, or I still wouldn't be here. You would think that company would want to hire me, right?
Well, I certainly think the armor. I mean, literally, I'm sitting here, my board op's looking at me. He's shaking his head. The room that I'm standing in doing this show, Mike, is smaller than the room you're in. And nobody's pulling triggers in here. So at that, because this is, I didn't realize this part of the story, but the rest of your team had pulled back. They're thinking of just calling in an airstrike, but they know at some point, did somebody recognize that, wait a minute, we went in with 22 guys. We don't have 22 guys coming out. And as I understand it, your radio was shot up too, correct?
Yeah, I had to call them back in. I had to take Clark's radio off of him. Mine had taken multiple rounds, and which was another surreal thing that happened to me. When I keyed up my radio, I couldn't hear anything, and then I felt something clip on my shoulder. Now, this is after being shot 27 times, and it's clipping my body armor on the top side of my shoulder. I looked down, and I was like, oh, it's my earbud. So I jam my earbud back in my ear, and I key up, and it's a solid tone, which means that all the crypto has been dropped. But so somehow it was still able to have enough power for that. I don't know how, because I think it got hit like three times. But I had to go to Clark's radio to call the guys back. And, luckily we have we're a lot more sophisticated than just dropping bombs all over the place. We're very cognizant where we put those things for to minimize collateral damage, and we definitely don't drop stuff out of aircraft when we don't know where all our guys are. in and operating procedure kept them because they didn't have a full head count from dropping on that house.
Okay.
So I was still in.
Okay. So at this point, we talk about 27 rounds, 11 went into your body armor, and that alone is a story in of itself. But I've heard you say that, put a finger on me any place other than my head, I was shot there. And yet you continued on to complete the mission. There were some other civilians in the house, as I understand it. So basically you cleared the house at that point by yourself, Mike, or was this after your other team members came back?
Well, after those two guys with the AKs were dispatched, I got up on my hands and knees, and I asked for status. And luckily for me, there was three of our Iraqi scouts that had been pinned down in the back of the house. And because of the way we work with foreign nationals, they didn't have radios. And we can't give them radios with our TTPs. It's stuff that we keep separate from them. Plus, there's a pretty bad language barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what defeated the whole language barrier for those guys from coming out of that house was the stream of bullets passing through the doorways. They weren't going to go anywhere. And they were able to come in. It was one of the first guys that we picked up when we got over there. I mean, that was a process to getting to work with those people and getting them to understand that we were there to help them, and then just to build that relationship so we can get to where we can have these guys. And they were good guys. They were they were trying to help their country. They believe in it. And I just lost my train of thought. Where's I going on that?
It's okay. So they came in, and then together you all cleared the remainder of the house. I think there was some women and children or other civilians in the target house.
There was. There was three scouts. That one came in. He actually gave me a report. He told me that Clark was dead. He told me that I had three of them. I was still definitely in shock, but I was still cognizant, and I was still able to control what I was supposed to control in that house. I put him on the front door. I told him, don't let anybody come through that front door. I told him, shoot everybody that sticks their face in that door. I came back. I found Clark. I found the six women and children in that room. I went deeper into the house. There was two scouts holding on, two more detainees, two more bad guys. And I checked their cuffs. I left one there. I brought one out to watch the women and children, and that's when I tried to make comms with the guys and found out that the radio was busted up and had to take Clark's radio off of him. I was able to finally call the guys back in. And I think that's probably the – I also deconflicted the front door, and I'd already told a guy, hey, shoot anybody that comes to that door. So I had to make sure that didn't happen. But I honestly didn't realize how bad I'd been shot up until the guys came in, and just the reaction they saw. The reaction was, man, you look really messed up.
Well, you're standing. That's what's amazing about it. Mike, we've got to pay for the show again real quick, but I just to try and get people to get a sense of this from if these numbers are correct, and I picked them up off the internet, so who knows. Entry was at approximately 1:33 a.m. at approximately 1:49 is when you made that all secure call. That's 16 minutes. People wait longer than that for a mocha java no fat skim foamy latte. That's amazing. That is truly amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit with Mike Day about there's courage in battle, and then there's courage after battle. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Mike has been sharing his amazing story, Navy SEAL Mike Day. Mike, I want to talk a little bit about what happened after that. One can assume when you absorb 16 bullets and some grenade fragments that your career as a Navy SEAL is probably, you know, on the backside of sunshine. But one thing that really stuck out to me, Mike, is you, in an interview I read, you said that when this whole thing first lit off, you sent up a little prayer, God, get me home to my girls. And you said that was the first real prayer that you've ever offered up. Tell us, share a little bit more with our listeners about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I would say I'm more of a spiritual person now than a religious, you know, mm-hmm. and at the time that, you know, where I was, and it was, I think the first time, it was the first time I ever asked anything of God. I've never assumed that, that there was some being there that was controlling every step that we have or dictating how things were going to turn out. But it was a pretty strong feeling for me to want to get back and see my girls. And it was a pretty driving factor in the emotions that I had at that point in time. You know, I got pretty angry. And you know, it never crossed my mind I was going to die. It was more anger and just autonomic response. And part of that autonomic response in that weird time lapse that I went through in that gunfight was, you know, from the time that it took me to enter that room, lose my rifle, transition to my pistol, and hit the ground, might have been 4 or 5 seconds. Might as well have been a couple minutes to me because. And I had a whole conversation with myself,
mm-hmm.
And it was definitely not 5 seconds to me.
Mike, Ben, regular listeners know there's kind of a tradition where, you know, Ben gets a dumb question every show, and this is going to be maybe one of the dumbest I've ever asked, but I need to know, when I look at your citations and medals and awards, I see one Purple Heart. You were shot 16 times. How does that work? Is the Purple Heart Award for one incident, no matter how many times you get shot? Or
correct, and I'm sure if you were to get into the manual, there's probably a time frame in between each incident, but I don't know what that is.
Okay,
but is a Purple Heart is for not being able to get out of the way per incident.
Fair enough. Part of what you're doing now, Mike, is a member of Eagle Rise Speaker Bureau. You go around and you make presentations to groups and corporations, and there's a number of subjects you cover. One thing that really struck me, and you just sort of touched on that, when during the fight there was not a lot of time passing, there wasn't a lot of time to say, okay, I do A, then I do B, and then if he does C, I do D. This was all muscle memory. This was all training. And as I understand it, one of the things that you believe or you share with others now is that a person can train in and out of anything in life. What, for those of us who will never get engaged in a 12-by-12 room with people trying to kill us, what are some examples that the average folks out here can, what can we train in and out of?
Oh, everything. Everything you are right now is what you trained into. Everything that... every bias that you have, everything you believe about yourself is how you make your decisions. If you, if there's something that you feel that you want to change, but you tell yourself that you're not good enough to make that change, you know, I'm too fat, I'm too ugly, I'm too stupid. I mean, everything that you do throughout that day is going to feed that if that's what you tell yourself. So, I mean, you just got to, kind of break that trend of listening to that voice in your head that's keeping you from doing what you want to do.
And that's a conscious decision. Do you, your experience, or as you're talking to people out there, is that's like any kind of training, but that's an inner voice we have to repeat to ourselves over and over again. I'm too fat. Well, I'm going to work. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to eat better. So, but that's not just a one-time thing. It's repetition, right? It's that both mental and muscle memory.
It is, and it's all training. I mean, that's all life is. You're just a collection of every experience you had and what you take away from it. So, I mean, if you tell yourself constantly that you are something, that's what all your decisions throughout the day are going to feed. And if it's a negative thing, it's going to feed that negative. If it's positive, it will be positive thoughts that feed that. And when I say training, it's just life experiences. It's everything. If you're depressed, you've allowed yourself to get to that point. You know, I'm not saying that there's not things that were dropped on you unexpectedly that you couldn't control. But what you can control is the reaction to it. And if the reaction's negative and you keep feeding it, well, that's the way it's going to turn out. And positive, likewise, if you take a positive influence and you continue to give yourself a positive influence on it, then more than likely it'll be a positive outcome.
Mike, in the years doing the show and talking to various warriors, you know, particularly those that are in the special operations community, there's a real challenge, a difficulty transitioning from that real high level protect and serve, doing something to save lives sort of lifestyle to the civilian world. What was your path like? And I'm guessing there was probably a few bumps along the road there.
Yeah, I mean, just like everybody else, I've had my own bumps. Anybody that said that they've never crashed into trauma and it didn't affect them is a sociopath. So, and that I'm definitely not. But, you know, I did my 21 years in the Navy, loved the SEAL teams. I got out and I was a non-medical case manager, a wounded warrior advocate for SOCOM for close to 7 years, where I dealt with people that were everything, you know, the worst combat injuries that you can think of, to people that were diagnosed with different types of cancer and ALS. So I was like an advocate to the service member and to the family. It was probably the most productive and the most enlightening part of my life is to learn people that way. You know, it was my job to wake up and find out how to improve somebody's position, 10 to 15 people a day when they're having the worst time of their life. It was very enlightening. It taught me a lot about people and myself. Very hard job, though. I mean, I spent the last 2 years of that job trying to quit.
Mm-hmm.
I took a significant pay cut to get out of that job because I found how much harder it is to fix things than it is to break them. But people go through, you can't get through this life without trauma. I got to witness much more severe than what I went through. It's makes you feel good when you see somebody that's having what you consider to be a worse deal than what you have deal with it and then do it gracefully.
Mike, I would propose to you, and again, it's pretty clear we're not going to see eye to eye on this. I do believe that things happen for a reason. I believe there's a reason you literally walked out of that firefight near Fallujah. I believe there's a reason why your phone rang that time when you were getting out of your truck with some different ideas in your head. And so I believe you were meant to do what you're doing now. And so let me ask you a question. A lot of what you talk about when you're speaking to people or when you're writing involves the power of the human connection and how important that is for people who are going through trauma or trying to pull themselves out of a bad situation. For example, and I'm kind of looking for your feedback here, given your experience and particularly that work that you're doing. I've got a friend who's a Vietnam-era veteran who's having some challenges right now. And one of the challenges is all the guys that he served with, that he was in country with, they're all gone now. And so that human connection for him, for guys that have been there, done that, have the stare, he's sort of standing alone now. What advice would Mike Day to give to someone like that?
Well, I think somebody that's in that position can only associate themselves with that partner life, and they're stuck in that. That person is a lot more than just what they were in Vietnam. You know, I've seen it with guys getting out of special operations. Their only identity is that, is a soft guy. And when it's taken away from them, sometimes that's like the hardest thing that they have to deal with. You know, I mean, conventional guys too. If it's taken away from them before they want to be done with it, and it's their only way to identify themselves, we're such more complicated animals than that, than just what we did for work.
Mm-hmm.
It was just work.
That's an excellent point, Mike. So when I come back, I'd like you to share with us, if you don't mind, kind of your recommendations on. You know, I feel very confident that no one listening to this broadcast or to the podcast down the line somewhere is ever going to get shot 27 times, much less survive getting shot 27 times. But people do have adversity in their life, and I'd like to have you wrap up the show with us sharing kind of what you've called, I think, customizing your adversity toolkit. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Miracle Mike Day, Navy SEAL. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. I'm very, very pleased to be joined by a fellow who I've wanted to have on the show, gosh, I mean, as long as I can remember. Navy SEAL Mike Day absorbed 27 rounds in some shrapnel and raiding a house in outside of Fallujah. And just a miracle story. And Chief, let me just say, I am forever grateful that there's people like you that are willing to do what's necessary and very often not pleasant to protect the rest of us so we can be safe at home. I'm glad you also mentioned that and clarified that you're not a sociopath, because I've heard you feel more comfortable in a gunfight than you do doing interviews. So I just want to kind of clear the air and make sure we're still friends.
Yeah, definitely.
Good to go.
I wasn't doing that. I didn't do that job because, I wanted to go kill people. I mean, that was business. I actually had empathy for those people because, I mean, I definitely realized that, we all just believe what we're brought up to believe. And I could have been born a baby over in Afghanistan, growing up with a whole bunch of different beliefs and ran ISIS. You know, that could have been me if I was born in a different place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. So often we forget how lucky we are with the blessings of liberty and to be citizens of the United States. I can't tell you how many guests I've had on the show that remind me every week of that.
We're definitely spoiled, and we take a lot of things for granted here. And I mean, that's no fault to anybody because they haven't had the experience. They don't have a reference point other than what the reference point is.
Sure. Mike, when you speak to groups, as I understand it, you talk about what you call an adversity toolkit. What, in layman's terms, what is that?
It's just resiliency. How to build resiliency, and again, resiliency is just training. You know, unfortunately, some of the strongest people I've come across is because they've had their butt kicked so many times, and they were forced into dealing with what they had to deal with. And people will look at a lot of things. You know, they'll look at my story. I can tell you dozens of stories more that are crazier than mine. The people that I worked for when I was a Wounded Warrior Advocate and the physical traumas that they suffered are so much more severe than what I did. I got lucky. I get off on these tangents and forget what point I was going.
No, it's fine. I guess what I'm hoping for or trying to get to is, you know, 99% of our country will never experience what you experienced, or even folks who experienced even less. You know, 99.5% of us never took the oath or wore the uniform. So I wonder sometimes I meet people who don't feel that they're deserving of helping themselves, that it was nothing, don't worry about it. I haven't really faced adversity, but perspective is different for everyone.
And when I was a Wounded Warrior Advocate, you'd be surprised at the people that did that same thing. They would try to put their trauma on a scale compared to somebody else and not feel that they had the right. And that's pretty ridiculous. I mean, trauma is trauma. There's different thresholds for different people. Something that affects me a certain way is not going to affect somebody else the same way. It might be worse, might be less. But a person's emotions and their trauma should not be gauged according to somebody else has a worse deal. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody will ever get fixed that way.
I mean, the honest truth is that some people might be affected by watching a car crash more so than the person that was actually in it. You know, it's just different thresholds. That doesn't mean they're any lesser of a person. They just, their life has had given them the experiences that it's given them, and that's their threshold. But fact is, nobody's getting through this game, you know, unscathed. Everybody's going to suffer trauma of some sort. Nobody should actually consider their trauma menial and that they shouldn't pay attention to it and take care of it because somebody else has a worse deal. That's not a good way to take care of your mind.
Yeah, I tell you, Mike, one of the advantages of being an outsider looking in is that I notice that where when you talk to folks that were there on 9/11 or a first responder who, you know, comes up on a car crash and has to cut out an infant out of the wreckage in context of what you and your comrades go through. It is different for everyone. But that, you're right. There's no, you know, like when you go to the doctor and they say, what's your pain like from 1 to 10? There is no 1 to 10 scale. It's different for everybody. So number one, Mike, I'm guessing your recommendation, though, is no matter what it is, the importance of reaching out for help. Don't take the path of pride or trying to gauge, you know, whether I'm deserving or not of admitting to people or asking for help, correct?
Yeah, I mean, if you're at, you know, wit's end, I mean, there's nowhere else to go. And you mentioned earlier something about the power of how do you state that? That's actually Bob's thing. The power of the connection.
Personal connection. Yeah, human connection.
Which is very important. But what I find to be more important, and this is kind of a new philosophy that I've come to figure out, because I spent my whole life trying to figure out what 10 people want me to do, and you can't make them all happy. But what I do know is if I'm not the best that I can be, if I don't do everything I can to make myself the best that I can be, then I'm no good to anybody else. All I'll do is spread myself thin to a bunch of different people. So I say more important, and this is not a statement to make you to make you selfish and forsake everybody else, but you should make yourself better, and that's, you know, physically, psychologically, so that you are better for everybody else around you. And I find that to be more important than the connection. I think it's important to figure out how to be alone and be self-reliant. Because in the end, that's who's with you, is you. So you have to be self-reliant and know how to draw off your own strengths. And if you can't do that, then you're really not the best you can be for everybody else.
Chief, those are some very powerful words. We've got about 2 minutes left. Real quick, I want to kind of get your perspective on this. It seems like our country now, you can't mass produce special operators like yourself. You've had 8 deployments. Do you think that we're relying too much on that? Are we blunting the tip of the spear?
Oh, God. In 2 minutes? That's a hard one. you know, I've gone from, you know, when I was a new guy, you know, I fast roped onto a ship into, I think the show was 60 minutes. And the question asked of me was, well, how do you feel that the U.S. government and takes all these tax dollars to prepare soft operators to do a job that they're never going to do? This was like 1990.
Yeah.
Actually, it was post-Gulf War. And I was, I couldn't even answer it.
Well, it comes back to the training, right? Better to be trained and ready than to have to get up to speed when the bad things happen.
Well, it's a good thing. Good thing we were.
Yeah. Mike Day, again, I am so grateful, and I believe our I know our listeners are grateful as well to people like you and what you've done and what your some of your comrades continue to do out there, not just defending freedom for those of us who are citizens, but for some of those other people out there in the world that don't have it quite as good as we do. And Mike, again, I'm just so proud. I'm so pleased that you took the time to share with us here today on American Warrior Radio.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find this podcast and others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. What a powerful, powerful interview with Mike Day. I'm shaken. I'm so pleased he came on the show. We also have a Facebook page. Follow us at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. On Twitter, at WarriorRadioTUC. Please, please share these important messages. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.